Keeneland is unique in that it is both a sales company and a racetrack, which means its president and CEO, Bill Thomason, must be well-versed in just about all aspects of the sport. Thomason took over the head roles in 2012, and his steady leadership has allowed Keeneland to maintain its place as one of the iconic names in the sport. Thomason is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
Why do TaylorMade horses sell for nearly double the market average? A history of success, honesty, and hard work. For over 40 years, buyers and sellers alike have trusted TaylorMade as the industry's top source for high-quality thoroughbreds and friendly service. While sellers get top dollar for their horses, buyers are rewarded for top results on the track. From sale toppers to Grade 1 winners to Breeders' Cup champions, think TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing.
In the vertical 607, at 607, Bobo, 600, in the vertical 7, 800, now 59, now a million, Bo, you're at though, I got Pete at 900, now a million.
Yes, it's that time. Keeneland's September yearling sale begins September 11th, and that always means that big money will flow through the sales ring as buyers look to find gold, racing's next superstars. This is Bill Finley, the host of the TDN podcast, and what better time to chat with Keeneland CEO and President Bill Thomason. Bill, welcome, and first of all, this year you're offering a one-day book one, and by doing so, you've heightened the exposure of your very best yearlings, the creme de la creme, so to speak. So why did you decide to try this format?
Well, Bill, thank you for having me on, and yes, the sale is right around the corner. And, you know, the format was a direct result of us talking to our consigners, our buyers, and others in discussions that actually started the beginning of this year. And it was to heighten the exposure of the top offerings. But it had other. It was to put a critical mass of quality horses in front of our buyers that constitute the largest buying bench in the world. And we also wanted to make it convenient as possible for our sellers to be with their horses and for buyers to work through the grounds to inspect the horses in the most logical and best fashion for them. So, you know, we also heard that the buyers were interested in Keeneland continuing to enhance their sales experience that we're so well known for providing. So there's a number of factors that came into the marketplace this year where we have listened to our constituents and the people who were going to be here at the sale, and we wanted to create an environment that was going to create the kind of atmosphere that you want that reflects the quality of the horses that are here. So what did we do? The book one with 167 horses followed by a little over 1,000 horses over the three-day book two. So we double the number of yearlings that were going to be cataloged before the break. That's what our sellers wanted. It's what our buyers wanted to see, that critical mass. So they're going to, and then when you combine book three, that's got another 825 quality horses, we've got a critical mass of horses. Buyers are going to be able to come in and see 2,000 of the best horses that are going to be offered in North America in their first week, and we're presenting the creme de la creme of the North American crop, quantity of quality, which is purely the result of us talking to the people who are important to us and important to our marketplace and that entrust their horses to us and the buyers who come here from all over the world.
And Bill, even under the old format, to get into book one or even book two is not an easy thing to do. I mean, this is a very prestigious sale. It's where you sell some of the best bred horses in the world. So now you're limiting even further. What did a horse have to show your inspection team to make the cut? Sounds like it's sort of like how Harvard goes out and selects who it's going to take in its class of 2021.
That's a really good comparison. Top pedigrees, top physicals. Our team was out looking at exceptional yearlings who were what we were told is to find those horses that were basically, if you consider them bulletproof, physical attributes of the horses. They're going to see exceptional pedigrees. They're going to see horses who vet to the perfection in their vetting. That's what the marketplace told us they wanted to be able to start this sale with. That really sets the stage for the quality of yearlings that we're going to see over the entire week. But these are the creme de la creme. And then after that, we're still going to see over that entire week one a group of horses with great physicals and nice pedigrees that even there can't be found anywhere else, but they're going to be able to be found in the sale. So a lot of desirable product that the buyers are going to wish to find.
Now, looking at the catalog, the premier sire, or let's say at least one of the top two or three in America, is certainly Tappet. And the number of Tappets among that 167 just stands out, 23, which is a tremendous percentage of this very elite book one. So first of all, what does that say for Tappet as a stallion? And also, what does it say for the quality that you have in book one?
Well, Tappet, leading commercial stallion, top sire winners at the racetrack. It's natural that his offspring are going to command the attention of buyers from around the world that are going to be here during book one and really our entire sale. And I think importantly, the number of Tappets at the sale speaks volumes to the depth of buyers that come here because they're, even though he is has accomplished what he has of his own right and Tappet being the leading commercial sire in the country, we still have a tremendous diversity of top sires in book one. Each of the top 10 sires are represented from the general sires list. And not only that, we have a number of quality offerings from the top five leading turf sires in North America, as well as internationally renowned sires like Frankel and Dancilli, Deep Impact, Invincible Spirit. It's just such a deep opportunity for top sires in the United States and top sires in the world compared with impeccable pedigrees that are unique offerings for the year.
And Bill, the last premier racing on the racetrack showcase before Keeneland September is Travers Weekend at Saratoga. Now, you guys are used to having big weekends on big days, but this was a phenomenal, phenomenal weekend for Keeneland. Let's go down the list. You have you sold the Travers winner, West Coast, the Forgo winner, Dre Frong, the Alan Jerkins winner, Practical Joke, and just again, while people are used to Keeneland graduates doing well, what does that do for your sale so far as momentum and people paying extra attention to Keeneland saying, wow, look what just happened at Saratoga. I darn well better buy something at Keeneland September.
Well, Bill, this is the world's most significant yearling sale. And I think just like leading up into any of our big races around the country, people look for this September with great anticipation. So there's already heightened awareness and heightened interest around the country for all of these horses that are running, that have run all year long and competed. So now they're kind of getting their last little looks before they start their plans for the Breeders' Cup and the end of the year championship racing. So everything that happens up to this sale just builds on the excitement and gets us to the September sale. Through Travers Weekend, our graduates have won 133 greater Group 1 stakes over the year, 29 of those Group 1 stakes. So in addition, I mean, people are still talking about Arrogate and what he did in the Pegasus Cup and the Dubai World Cup, Always Dreaming, Cloud Computing, Collected, Gervin, Lady Aurelia, Lady Eli. It's just so all of those things kind of culminate right now with all of the great success that our graduates have had coming out of the sale, and they've gone all around the world, not just here, but they've gone all over the world and competed at the highest level and won. So here we go. Here's the next opportunity.
Let me vie away from the yearling sale for just a second because I want to stay on the topic of Travers Day. There's still another horse with Keeneland connections who won, and that's Lady Eli, who won the Ballston Spa. Now, obviously not a yearling, we all know that, but she'll be offered as a broodmare prospect at the November breeding stock sale. And Mares like this come around once in a great while with her ability, her class, her consistency. And this particular side of the auction market has been very competitive lately to get these great mares into the sales for people looking to buy brood mares, or sometimes they go as racing prospects as well. But what kind of coup was it for Keeneland to get her into your November breeding stock sale?
Well, Lady Eli is one of those who's just created such attachments all around the country for her career. A top turf filly and mare in North America for 17. The brilliance, the first time she set foot on the turf, and the way that she's competed over all these this time, and the having overcome laminitis, a five-time Grade One winner, winning every year from 2 to 5, competed all across the country at the highest level. Every time she shows up, displaying a brilliant turn of foot. So everything that she has done and the class that she has shown is spectacular. And you're right, Bill. They do come up very, very seldom. A horse of the quality and the class of Lady Eli. We're proud to have her. And also, you look at a champion, Stellar Wind, who's going to be here. So there's a champion on the dirt, and it's the kind of horses and fillies when they come to us that have been entrusted to us that have done so well out of our sales ring. We've got the people in here and a demand for these kind of fillies that the magic that's created down there in their sales ring is just if people haven't been there to experience these things, you have to do it. It just sends chills down your spine when these kind of special offerings come in front of the public.
I bet that's going to be an exciting moment. Bill, back to the yearling sale. And originally, you guys started off with a very creative idea, a bonus involving Book One, where there would be a particular cash bonus to any yearling sold from the sale who went on to win a graded stakes. Now you've taken it one step further. You've expanded the bonus structure throughout the sale. So let's ask you this question in two parts. First of all, why did you come up with the bonus structure in the first place? And then why did the Keeneland team decide, hey, let's do this for more than just Book One?
Well, globally, Bill, the September sale is recognized as a primary source of champions and graded stakes winners year after year. So our we are charged as a part of our mission with promoting and selling the best in the business. That's for our buyers and sellers and people who compete at the highest level. That's what we're all trying to do. The success of those graded stakes winners from the September sale, since it is so well recognized, led to discussions, and again with our constituents and us looking at ways that we could reward that success at the highest level that all of our buyers are trying to achieve and our sellers are trying to achieve. So the result after we went through that and talking about it for a couple of years was the Book One bonus, which rewards sellers and owners and underscores our commitment to those who invest in this great thoroughbred industry. And then from there, so that was the start. We are looking at ways to make sure that the people who take the risk and invest and love our horses are properly rewarded for supporting Keeneland and for coming here to find that next source of their Grade One winners. So really what happened is the positive support from our horsemen to that Book One bonus is the thing that really prompted us to fast-track the rollout of the second tier, which was the seller bonus. That was the second part of what we did. It was always our intent to introduce the second part of the bonus structure for horses that weren't cataloged in Book One. But because of the level of excitement we received with a Book One bonus, we felt it was a good time to institute this additional program, which rewards all of those horses throughout our entire sale, acknowledges the depth of qualities in our sale, and that where these horses can come from that can go around the world and compete in Grade 1, Grade 2, and Grade 3 races around the world. And we thought it was appropriate. So based on the 2015-16 results, we project to pay nearly $3 million in cash rewards in the first 2 years to owners and sellers of the graduates of this upcoming September sale, and that's significant.
That's a big number, no doubt about it. So, Bill, you've already mentioned this a little bit, but I want to get back to another topic. And back to book one, and there is an international presence in this. The sires I wrote down were Galileo, DeBowie, Deep Impact. You mentioned Frankel. How did this come about? Was it people with foreign sires looking to get involved in the Keeneland sale? Was it you guys going out and recruiting some of these people? A little bit of both. How did this all come to be?
It's a little bit of both. You know, the September sale is the world's largest yearling sale. So we attract buyers from some 50 different countries. So due to this international appeal, it's natural that we seek to offer yearlings by sires attractive to all segments of the global market. September yearlings have also had such great success on an international scale, and we can't forget that. When you think about, you mentioned Lady Aurelia, who has gone overseas and been an incredible top performer, but think about performers like Hawkbill, Order of St. George. So buyers and sellers from all around the world realize the quality that we provide in this yearling marketplace. So we're proud of the depth of the catalog in so many areas.
There'll be a lot more on the Keeneland September yearling sale with Bill Thomason, our guest this week on the TDN podcast. But first, this message from our friends at TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, is your number one source offering the full spectrum of bloodstock services. With over four decades of experience and the industry's top resources, TaylorMade has the power to help you achieve your loftiest goals. Last year, horses consigned by TaylorMade sold for nearly double the general market average. So if you're looking to get the most for your yearlings, make 2017 the year you give TaylorMade a try. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what we can do for you.
Bill, so far this year at the yearling sales in general, the clearance rate is up by 4%, the gross 8%, and the average is up by 10%. That's all good news, not just for Keeneland, but for the sales industry as a whole. And why do you think people are feeling encouraged to buy right now? Why is it a good market right now for, well, everybody, in particular the sellers?
Well, we're in the midst of a robust global economy, which is fueling sales all over the world, actually. We've had strong two-year-old sales this year in America, but not only in America. We've sent horses that have been bought here out of our September sale last year that have gone over for many of the international sales and have done very, very well over there. So we've got pen hookers and people that have taken horses from yearling to two-year-old sales that have done very, very well. And the excitement, you just can't discount the importance of Arrogate, you know, who has gone over and won such lucrative races as the Breeders' Cup, the $12 million Pegasus Cup, and the $10 million Dubai World Cup, have just heightened interest. And we've had some of our really special horses that have gone on at older ages now and have captivated the public and have done so well. And there just seems to be a buzz around the racetrack right now and the race course and people attaching themselves to some of these horses that have stayed racing a little bit longer that has really helped fuel interest and excitement in our business right now.
And Bill, as I'm sure you've noticed, once again, bad news out of the Jockey Club statistics. The next listing of the fall crop is down by 1,000. Now, that's not necessarily a factor for what we've been talking about, a book one, because there's no shortage of quality. But we are looking at a problem with quantity. And let's not forget that Keeneland is a sale, especially towards the end, the last couple days, where you will sell $30,000 and $40,000 yearlings, which is an important part of what you do, an important part of the auction market. So as somebody who is in charge of a sales company, are you worried about this? Should all sales companies be worried about this problem with quantity when it comes to selling horses?
Sure. Well, I think the marketplace in its entirety has got to be worried. We do need quality and quantity. Since horses can come from all segments of the marketplace. But, Bill, as we've recovered from the financial collapse in 2008, the entire economy really has remained very disciplined. You've asked a question that our whole industry is going to be forced to acknowledge and rationally deal with for not just this year or the coming year. We've got to deal with it for years to come. Stallion owners and breeders are an intelligent and resilient bunch that are very good at producing a product that are going to receive economic support in the marketplace. Racetracks provide the financial engine for earning potential for those horses through our purses. And here at Keeneland, we create this full life cycle of providing great experiences for owners of those horses to enjoy the sport and the excitement of the competition of those horses. So we've got to figure out how to grow our sport in numbers of horses and quality. We have got to figure out how to grow our sport for owners participating in the business. And it is a very complicated, not complicated, but it's a detailed explanation. There's no really single factor that's going to be a part and create that success.
And sort of on the same subject here, as we're talking about, you know, the lesser expensive yearlings, one of the trends in sales we've seen is that the book one type horses, you and I have both used the same expression, the creme de la creme, they have never been more popular. I mean, people have no problem going into the seven-figure range for a lot of these horses. But there is this feeling that the middle market has been soft, that sort of middle range, small time breeder trying to sell a horse for $75,000 is really struggling. So what are your expectations for that segment of the market at this upcoming sale? Have you seen signs leading up to Keeneland September that it's starting to improve? Do you think it'll be better at this sale? Is it still a cause for concern?
Oh, it's obviously a cause for concern, but we keep using this term, which is still very applicable. The market has been polarized, and we've seen nothing at any of the sales this year that tells us any differently. It's kind of one of those feelings of all or nothing when you've got that horse that, as many are described as checking all the boxes, there's just no limit to what they can do, and they've greatly exceeded expectations and sold so very well. But if they don't, then all of a sudden that's the polarization of the market, and they're not in great demand. But the thing that I think has been heartening, when you listen to all of those that have attended, especially the two-year-old sales, we have seen a bit of a reemergence of that middle market. When you look at the various sales results from around the country, the demand for good horses in that middle market range has been very, very strong. So I think as we head into the September sale, I think with the anticipation we've got about obviously the horses that do check all the boxes and are going to be in great demand are going to be extraordinary. And then we hope that we see a good, strong middle market for good horses at every level of sale, because we work very hard, you know, developing these buyers domestically and internationally. And as our team has traveled and as I have traveled around the world is coming to Keeneland. They're talking about the sale. They're talking about our marketplace. They're about the success our horses have had overseas. And I think we're going to have a good, robust market.
We'll return with Bill Thomason after this message from TaylorMade, and the discussion will turn to the racing side of the business at Keeneland. Stay with us.
Attention sellers, now's the time to start preparing for the upcoming yearling sales, and putting your yearlings on the path to success begins right now. As the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, the expert team at TaylorMade knows what it takes to succeed at public auction. So if you're ready to get top dollar for your yearlings in 2017, visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what we can do for you.
The biggest news Keeneland made, at least from the racing end of things of late, was the decision to raise the takeout. Bill, you and your team have already explained your reasoning, but it bears repeating. So I'll give you the chance again to tell the listeners, the fans, et cetera, why did you think it was the proper thing for Keeneland to do to raise the takeout levels?
Well, let me kind of set the framework for Keeneland on some things that people don't understand, that Keeneland is a very unique in that we are a private profit company with a not-for-profit mission. So Keeneland is not a not-for-profit entity. As a for-profit institution, we've got an obligation to run a good business in accordance with our mission, passed along to us from our founders, and now entrusted to our governing trustees and board. So that mission and every decision we make solely for the benefit of our industry, mm-hmm. our community, and the care of this facility. Those are the only three places that anything Keeneland does can go. Unique to any place else, Keeneland shares are in trust. No dividends have ever been paid on these shares. And our trustees and directors don't make any compensation for being for their service to our entity. Therefore, every dollar we make goes directly into our mission. So what really happened to us is after we completed what has been acclaimed as one of, if not the most successful Breeders' Cups in history, for the past 2 years, Bill, our team's been looking at all those experiences and planning for the future. We're thoughtful. We're a well-run company who understands our obligation to uphold that commitment to our mission. For an industry with a lot of different constituents that count on us and our community to grow the sport and the care of this facility. So we had to look at every revenue stream, every cost center of our company, because we've got to make sure that we're putting maximum benefits to support that mission and so many initiatives that our industry is counting on us to provide. We looked at our takeout just as one of those. We haven't adjusted it in 15 years. We've been 2 points lower than any other major racetrack for that period. If takeout was a major factor, our handle should have been 20% higher than other tracks on comparable days, and that just simply hadn't been the case. We know purses are a main driver for an economically healthy industry, and it's important to grow in the sport. We have grown our purse structure and will continue to grow it. And with additional funds far in excess of horsemen's agreements and what we should have been putting into the sales or putting into our race meets from our sales and other revenue sources. But even that's not enough to grow our purses and everything else that supports us and our mission to grow our business and our industry with simply continuing to use those resources. So I also have to put things in perspective that even with these increases we just made, we're fourth among the top 10 racetracks in estimated blended takeout. Mm-hmm. So instead of being number one by a wide margin, we're still fourth among all of those major racetracks in our blended takeout structure. So we still have a value-priced product for the quality that we're providing and especially the investment that we're making towards the future of racing. So we think that, we think that's an important initiative for the business and something that we just had to do in order for us to remain competitive with our racing product.
Bill, I think you just gave us a very good explanation, and I think that'll lead people listening to this to have a better understanding of the decision. But I think one thing that, and you've seen this as well, that people don't quite get or are having a hard time putting their hands around is that, well, Keeneland is already excellent, you know, whatever superlative I want to use when it comes to its racing. You know, Saratoga, Keeneland, Del Mar, they run hand in hand. Big fields, grade one races, great racing, tremendous purses. So I think people look at a Keeneland unlike they would, a Finger Lakes. That's not, maybe not the best example because that's a much lower tier track. And say, well, why did they need to improve upon something that is already of great quality, being the purses, and then purses go hand in hand with the quality of racing?
Well, it does. And so of all the ways that you just described it, let's remember that Keeneland's core mission from the beginning was to provide racing at the highest level. Competition is increasing from racing jurisdictions with gaming, Naira, Oaklawn. We compete with not just other tracks for our top owners and trainers, jockeys, horses to come here. But we're competing with other forms of entertainment. So we're taking a long-term view to what we need to do to grow our industry and grow our sport. So our founders envisioned a race course that rivaled all the great race courses of the world. That's what we have been entrusted to do for the growth and perpetuation of the sport and the fans also that support it. So there was never any mention of anything that allowed us to do anything other than have success at the highest level. Let's also know that purses are very important and they're the driver, but they're not the only component to grow in our industry. To achieve the vision that our founders have and that we are entrusted with, we had to look at every one of our business lines that supports that core business of racing and sales. So we remember, and the other thing that people don't know is every dollar of revenue that we generate at Keeneland really goes into a single pot. And from that single source of revenues, then we invest in all the initiatives that drive participation and growth of our sport. Purses, very important, but we also invest in fan development, our community, and the involvement of our community in developing new and young fans at the forefront of numerous safety initiatives for human and equine athletes. The research project and the millions of dollars that we've spent for the health of our human and equine athletes, the industry integrity issues, wagering and safety. We donate millions to charity from Keeneland. We sponsor races and travel around the world promoting not only our sales, but our United States breeding industry and the great things about our horse. So every decision, Bill, that we make and every communication and every discussion internally takes into account our understanding of our responsibility mm-hmm. to a broad constituency of breeders, buyers, sellers, owners, players, our fans, our community. All those things are important and providing for their enjoyment and success in the business. And we cannot ignore that responsibility mm-hmm. to any single segment. It's something that's a burden and a joy for all of us that we just can't ignore to ignore all those constituents and all those people who count on us and that we feel such a strong obligation.
Now, there has been a lot of backlash over this decision. I imagine you expected some, but have you been surprised by the amount? And is it perhaps, as you've just explained, maybe people aren't looking at the bigger picture?
Well, I wasn't really surprised. We understand the leadership that Keeneland provides to the industry and also the strong connection that so many people are who are emotionally connected to this place. It is very special. We know and trust that once we not only explain why the decision was made, but for us it's proving by actions and deed that where the funds are going to continue to be used and invested for the benefit of all those passionate players and participants in our business, that they're going to continue to support the quality of racing that we've always provided at Keeneland and join in with us as they always have for our vision and the good things that we're doing to promote and grow the sport.
Down to the last 16th, it's Pulpit on the lead by 3, Acceptable and Stolen Gold, and Pulpit holds up his end of the bargain. He's headed for Churchill. Pulpit takes the toy on the bluegrass by 3 1/4.
We have a furlong to run, and Alidar has opened the lead out to 6 lengths. Raymond Earl still second, followed on the outside by Go Forth and Sonny Songster. But as they're nearing the finish, it's Alidar just drawing away with the lead with every stride under the wire. Alidar, very easy, maybe a 10-length winner.
In the final furlong, it's Holy Bull. He draws away in hand under Mike Smith. Valiant Nature second. Nearing the wire, it's Holy Bull winning the bluegrass.
Bill, we just played 3 stretch runs from some of the most notable bluegrasses of recent times. It's the Keeneland signature race, especially of the spring meet. And it was a little bit of a shocker last year, and I'm sure you were as shocked as anybody when the Graded Stakes Committee downgraded the bluegrass to a grade 2. Your reaction to it, was it a fair move on their part?
I'll use the word disappointed. Mm-hmm. We were disappointed, but I can assure you that we are committed to returning the Toyota Bluegrass to its grade 1 status. I guess the thing that we were looking at is we, in recent years, the past 3 years, we've made significant investments and changes to not only the installation of our state-of-the-art dirt surface, increasing the purse to $1 million, move the scheduling of the race once we had done those 2 things to 4 weeks before the Kentucky Derby. So we put a number of things in place that we knew were going to give the race the opportunity to attract the fields and get us back to having the type horses that were going to compete at the highest level after they came from here to go on to the Derby and other grade one races across the country. So what we were hopeful of, Bill, is that we would get a bit more time for those changes to show up in the numbers that's used by the graded stakes committee who evaluates the races. Ultimately, do I think it was fair? Yes. I mean, I do, because we trust the methodology and the objectivity that's used by the graded stakes committee, who is entrusted with a very difficult job of assigning grades to these races.
Right. And Bill, part of the problem, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, is the Bluegrass essentially competes with four other races, being the Florida Derby, Arkansas Derby, Wood Memorial, and Santa Anita Derby. So there's this glut of races right essentially at the same time, all for the same kind of horses. And that has watered down probably everybody's race in some respect. So what can you said you're determined to get it back to a grade one, but with all this competition for the horses, what can you guys do to, you know, show the graded stakes committee, hey, we mean business. We think this is one of the great Kentucky Derby preps there is. First thing that comes to mind, even though at $1 million, you would never think that you would need to raise the purse, but is that something in the back of your mind? So what do you do to get the Toyota Bluegrass back to that grade one status?
Well, you've mentioned a lot of prestigious races around the world or around the country, but I will also tell you that winning a graded stakes race at Keeneland and the importance of the Bluegrass, even in that downgrading, has obviously not changed, Bill. First, you know, the most important thing, it maintained its 100-point value for the Derby qualifying system. And when I talk about by deeds and by actions, how we always sort of look at things pragmatically, we look to the 2017 field, which was remarkably strong. IRAP, who's gone on to win the Ohio Derby and Indiana Derby, the Practical Joke, who won the Dwyer, and the Alan Jerkin, who won the Belmont, McCracken, who went on to win the Matt Wynn, Wild Shot, who won the Pat Day Mile. So what we saw out of the field and the competitiveness and the excitement of our 2017 Bluegrass told us that it was not going to take us long to get that grade one status back.
Agreed. It was definitely a very good race this year, which was kind of ironic in after they had downgraded. So, again, sort of on the same subject, though, and, you know, so many races and not enough horses to go around. This isn't a Keeneland problem. This is an industry problem. And just a few weeks ago, we saw a weekend where two, again, great three-year-old races were run, the Haskell and the Jim Dandy, the Haskell at Monmouth, the Jim Dandy at Saratoga, one day apart for essentially the same horses, the Haskell grade one, Jim Dandy a grade two, but a very prestigious race. Jim Dandy had five horses in it, and we all know the bettors don't want to see four horse fields. A lot of people out there would rather bet a $3,000 claimer if it had 12 horses in a five-horse field in a graded stakes race. And just, you know, put on your industry hat. You know, what can the industry do to solve this problem? I mean, clearly there are too many races, but nobody wants to give anything up. Are there any solutions to this sort of thing?
It's difficult, Bill. Field size and the issue that you're talking about is not going to go away. The horses available for racing since the foal crop started declining in 2009 after the financial collapse, and now leading to relatively stable numbers for the past 6 years at around 20,000 horses, 20,000 foals, means there's not going to be increased numbers of horses annually entering the market, the racing market, and at our race courses for years to come. And there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. The production cycle of a horse is something that just cannot be altered. So we have to deal with, we are now at kind of the bottom of that racehorse number that are going to be available for us at races at our race courses. And we are going to have to address it as an industry, and it's here. Stakes races are coveted by breeders who and racetracks, since in so many ways they drive the economics, both with the value of black tie for the breeders and for racetracks with sponsorships and all the other economic benefits that come from presenting the best races in America. So there's no question, though, there are going to be less stakes races in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that the Graded Stakes Committee is evaluating ways to protect the integrity of what those races mean and what that black type means, while at the same time they've got a difficult task of respecting the value of what those races are to the breeding industry and to the race courses. But inevitably, it is just a fact of life and a factor that we have to put in within our industry over the coming year and have to have rational discussions about how we are evaluating the number of stakes races that are going to be available and that are going to be supported around the country.
So one of the good news things that's happened in Kentucky racing recently is after years of somewhat fighting a losing battle to get gaming at the Kentucky racetracks, everybody pivoted and decided to go the historical racing route. You guys have teamed up with the Red Mile Harness Track, and they have the historical racing machines just down the road. You guys share in the revenue. Personally, as a fan, I'm glad they're not at Keeneland because I think that might, it just doesn't seem appropriate to have gaming machines at Keeneland. So you found the best of both worlds. You get the gaming revenue, and you don't have them at an iconic racetrack, at least on your grounds. Okay, so enough of my putting in my opinions. What's important is what you think about them, and how much of a success have they been so far? Have they met expectations, and what kind of a shot in the arm have they been for racing at Keeneland?
Well, you said that very well. You know, it was something that we felt very strongly when we looked ahead at the future, that historic racing was going to be it was going to be a product that our industry could own. It was at a scale, and attached itself to our industry in such a way that this was something we could own as an industry, and would greatly enhance our ability to provide much needed fresh flow of funds to our racing product and to our purse programs to make not only Keeneland, but to have a chance to get our circuit back in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. We haven't been able to use that terminology for a long time. And we also heard loud and clear that to have this at Keeneland was not something that everybody was excited about, and it really wasn't going to be the best location. And one of the things that we're very proud of that it allowed us to do is to establish a wonderful partnership with the Red Mile and its ownership group. The owners of the Red Mile are some of the largest owners in the standardbred industry. They are very, very good businessmen. They are passionate about their industry, about the standardbred industry, and what they're doing for their horsemen and their industry. It allowed us to put a facility in a place that really has benefited the entire area that it's in downtown Lexington. So it has achieved everything that we wanted in a partnership with the three partners of the Red Mile, and we're proud of what we've been able to accomplish so far. But Bill, the historic racing is a product that takes time to grow. Mm-hmm. So is it meeting expectations? Yes. But we also know that it's going to take time. We've made a huge investment in the facility. I mean, between the two of us, to think that we built a facility in downtown Lexington that a $45 million, it has added a great excitement downtown. It's allowed us to put our simulcast facilities in a great place to be able to help grow our simulcasting product as well. Over the two meets this year, for example, it will have added $1.5 million to our purse structure through just the KTDF fund itself. And we really expect for those funds and what it's going to do for not only us, but for the standardbred industry as well, for helping Red Mile be successful. And with the injections that are going to come from it over the next 5 years, is really going to lay a great foundation for the future of racing throughout all of Kentucky, actually, and enhancing and creating again this Kentucky circuit that we all want to have happen.
Mm-hmm. Bill, entering 2015, not everybody was on board with the idea of Keeneland having the Breeders' Cup. It was a little bit controversial, but coming out of the Breeders' Cup, everybody said the same thing. This was a great event. very well run. The Keeneland facility worked perfectly. It certainly didn't hurt you that you had American Pharoah, a Triple Crown winner, win the Breeders' Cup. So let's not go back because we don't need to rehash that. History has recorded this as one of the most successful Breeders' Cups of all time. Let's look forward. How soon do you want the Breeders' Cup to come back to Keeneland? And I'm sure you do want it back. And what have you heard from the Breeders' Cup team about it returning to Lexington?
Interestingly, I might have been asked that question just a couple of times.
I bet.
we're proud of what this team accomplished in the Breeders' Cup, and it really is still being talked about, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And the things that we're really proud of is that it's helped so many international participants came here to our sales, so they have experienced Lexington and our community when the sales were going on, September, November. But they haven't been able here to experience what we provide at Keeneland Racecourse and to experience what we call the Keeneland Way. All of these special team members who were so engaged and so passionate about making this an experience that people would walk away from this racetrack and from this very special experience and would be talking about for years. So the thing that I also try to get across, and so many people who talked about, they walked in doors and people were so nice and polite, and they've never been to a place like that. And I've had to say, you know, this wasn't something we just did for one day. What you experienced was something that Keeneland does every single day at every single race meet, every single time, really, that you step on our grounds, whether it's racing or sales, just here for an event. So all I can tell you is that it will be back. When? I don't know.
Well, fair enough. I'm sure it'll be back. I'm sure the Breeders' Cup team is going to shuffle its papers and meet and get it back to Keeneland, and it can't come back soon enough. Bill Thomason, thanks so much for your time. Good luck at the sale coming up. Your optimism is infectious, and I can see why you are very bullish on what's going to happen at Keeneland coming up in just a couple days. Again, thanks to TaylorMade for sponsoring this. And Bill, again, well done at Keeneland, and keep up the good work.
Bill, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for all the kind words, and we look forward to a great sale for our industry.
Very good. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.